You are now listening to the Legends Lingo Podcast. Here's your hosts, Al, Powder, and Maddie B.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back in Legends Lingo Podcast, episode 245, presented by StudentUnionSports.com. Make sure to check out everything going on at StudentUnionSports.com, from the daily blogs to the podcast, everything else in between. We got to give shout-outs to our podcast on the network. Is it Saturday yet, boys? In the thick of things with college football season, it's actually getting close to kind of the end of the regular season, then into the bowl games and everything, the college football playoffs. So make sure to check them out. If you want to win some money on gambling, make sure to check out the Chasers podcast, where they have you covered from college football, NFL, MLB, NBA, and everything else that you can imagine. If you want to get your soccer fix in, make sure to check out the Yellow Card podcast and make sure that you continue to get your soccer needs there. And obviously for Boston sports action, you know where it is, right here, Legends Lingo Podcast. Al DeHegan here, Tom Powder, Cadmus here. Powder, I didn't ask you this off air. Did you get a haircut?
I did, like, I think 2 weeks ago.
Really? And I'm not saying this in a bad way. Your hair looks different today. It looks good. After saying, it looks a little different.
I put some, like, gel, or not gel, but, like, mousse in it kind of style it a little bit.
Got it. Okay. I gotcha. No Maddie B this week. Maddie's had a rough go of it the past week or so. He texted us, let us know he's okay. Had something that was very, very important that he needs to take care of. So, Maddie, we miss you. We love you. We want you to be back next week and going forward. So, hurry on back, please, because Powder may not be here next week because he's going to be out of state. Mm-hmm. So, please. Yeah. Please come back, because I need a co-host, please. But anyways, let's get into it. So, really busy week, I would say, in Boston sports, Powder. The Bruins are still continuing their season off to a hot start. The Celtics are 3-0, and we're going to talk about them. And believe it or not, there are some problems with them being 3-0. I know it's crazy to hear, but we'll get into that. Obviously, we'll talk about the Patriots game against the Dolphins, preview the Commanders, talk about the outlook for the rest of the season. Excuse me. But then the Red Sox made a move that we all been looking forward to, and it finally happened. So let's start out with the Patriots, Powder. I think that's just kind of a fair thing to do at this point. So Patriots were coming off a big win against the Bills at home in week 7. They had improved to 2-5. They came into week 8 against the Dolphins, and it went just about as how we expected it. Patriots lose 31-17 in Miami, drops them to 2-6 on the year. Just opening take, it's really sad, Powder, when you already know the outcome before it actually happens, and it's on the side you don't want to be on. Because that Dolphins team, let's just call it like it is, the Dolphins are way more talented than the Patriots. They just are. They have more talent, especially at the receiver position. I mean, Tyreek Hill can get behind any NFL defense. He proved it on Sunday, and a long touchdown, 42-yard touchdown pass from Tua Tagovailoa to Tyreek Hill when the Dolphins were down 7-0 to the Patriots, which was shocking that the Patriots had a lead in this game. So that's one thing. Mac Jones, once again, didn't play terrible, but didn't play great. Had a costly interception when the Patriots were down 7 late in the first half, and they were driving, and they were in the red zone, and then Mac Jones throws a game-changing interception because that turned everything around at that point. But again, just kind of opening take, Powder, this team, I mean, they just can't catch a break. They can't. Besides, like, losing the game, they lose Kendrick Bourne for the season because of a torn ACL. So they're now their best receiver, who was their number one receiver this year and having a good year, caught a touchdown in that game too, by the way, is now out for the year. So in a span of 2 months, you've lost your best defensive player, your best defensive rookie, your best offensive player as far as playmaker is concerned, and you lost a critical special team guy in Marcus Jones. I think it's time to embrace it, Powder.
Yep, embrace the tank.
Embrace the word that rhymes with tank. Embrace the tank. Because you know what? But you know what, Powder? I'm gonna throw a twist on this. It's kind of a win-win now for Patriots fans. It really is. Because if they win the football game, then you're happy, right? Your team wins. Yeah. You know, you have a good week. You have a good Monday going into work, and you hope they build momentum. But if they lose, then you take a look at those standings on Tankathon and you're like, you know what? The draft pick may be looking a little better, maybe looking like, you know, Drake May or Caleb Williams or Marvin Harrison Jr. could be within reach. And that's why, again, it's okay to embrace the tank. Like I've seen on Twitter, and I know I'm rambling on, Powder. I do want to hear your thoughts in a second. I've been seeing people on Twitter being like, oh, you can't embrace the tank culture. It's not that you're embracing the culture. You're just recognizing, okay, 2023 is not our year. Like we thought that we were going to take a jump in 2023. We didn't. We're on the, you know, we're the worst team in the AFC and one of the worst teams in football. Why don't we start over, have a rebuild-retooling type of year, get ready for 2024 so we can be back. So you're not rooting for the losing per se, but you're rooting for change. You need change in that locker room. You need new players. You need new blood. And guess what? That's the way to do it. Lose the games, not on purpose. Try to win. But if you don't win, I don't know. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's really not. Like, again, they're not going to the playoffs. They would have to go 8-1 just to have a shot at the playoffs to get in at 10-7, and that's not happening. They still got to play the Bills again. They still got to play the Chiefs. They still have to play the Jets again, and the Jets have been playing better. They're not – I don't care, the Patriots have beaten the Jets so many times. They're not – it's not happening this year, folks, so let's forget the playoffs. But again, you need to now pick a direction. And by the way, the trade deadline came and went. No moves, which was about as we expected, right? We didn't expect them to make anything. Like Josh Uche's name got thrown around. Kyle Duggar's name got thrown around. Mike Onwenu's name got thrown around. But you do have something with these guys. You need to re-sign your young guys. You need to re-sign Duggar. You need to re-sign Onwenu. You need to, re-sign Uche. Now, I think Uche's definitely gone. I think Onwenu has a good chance of being back. And I think Duggar has a good chance of being back, but you got to pick a direction. So, Powder, I'll defer to you because I do want to hear from you. Take as much time as you need. Thoughts on the Patriots game or any highlights you saw? Thoughts on kind of where they should go at this point?
Like I said off air, I was at a baseball field watching some of our teams make a run at a championship this past weekend in Long Island, New York. So, unfortunately, I did not get a chance to watch a Patriots game. But, like you said, it's kind of been the story of the whole season. Patriots had a chance early and then make a couple costly mistakes and they lose a game and it doesn't really feel close. I agree with you. Miami's definitely more talented at this point. I see all these tweets pretty much every day about how we took for granted the 20 years of how good the Patriots were. I agree with that. Looking back at it, like you thought it'd be forever and obviously it didn't last. But I think they should embrace a tank where you need to lose in order for things to change. And I don't just mean how you said players. I think personnel on the coaching sides need to change, or maybe if the personnel doesn't change, the philosophy needs to change. It's getting to the point where I think where some coaches think they can win the old way they used to, and it just doesn't work anymore in the NFL. You need young, athletic guys. And the Patriots do not have that many weapons, that many young athletic guys. I think losing is hopefully finally this year after 3 straight years. Was it 2021? The Patriots made the playoffs but got killed in the first round. So it's one of those things. Hopefully after these past 3-4 years without Brady, you can see that the Patriots need to change direction in their philosophy of thinking and get young, athletic weapons with receivers and everything like that. Hopefully, especially this year, have, in a way, I kind of want them to go like 4-13. So then it can be a real shock to the system. And hopefully that's what the Patriots need to kind of say, okay, we need to change our strategy and how we go about getting players and the players we get.
I'll tell you what, it's not a surprise that you said that this team needs a new voice, because they do, right? They need somebody else to be making the personnel decisions because Bill Belichick can't do it. Matt Groh certainly can't do it. So you need somebody else in there that's calling the shots at this point. And if I'm Robert Kraft, I'm going down to Bill and saying, listen, this is going to go it's going to go one of two ways. Either you fix this season and try to be competitive, or if you're not going to be competitive, at least embrace tanking. Not saying lose on purpose, but embrace that if we lose, it's not the worst thing in the world. Because we know what Belichick's after. He's after Shula's regular season wins record. We know that at this point.
Yeah.
He has everything else that he could ever want. Super Bowl titles, winning percentage, everything. He has all that. Now it's about the future of the New England Patriots. We know Belichick is probably not going to be here past the decade at the absolute most. Like, and that's 6-7 years, Powder. Like, you know, I would be shocked if Belichick is still here in like 2028. I would be shocked if he's there that long, which I don't think he's going to be. But you got to start thinking, who's the head coach going to be when Belichick's gone? Are you promoting Joe Judge? I don't think so. So are you going to do Gerard Mayo in that role? Are you going to have Bill O'Brien step into that role because he's had NFL head coaching experience? What is your future? Because I'll tell you something. This is what their future should look like for next year, at least, Powder. It should be the defense, bringing back Matt Judon. And then on offense, you have Pop Douglas. You have Ramondre Stevenson, who I'll give a pass to because he had a good year last year and he's, you know, not that great this year, but I'll give him a pass. So Pop Douglas, Ramondre Stevenson, you should re-sign Kendrick Bourne, even though they won't do that. And then after that, you know, rebuild it. Rebuild the skill positions, get rid of Devontae Parker, get rid of Juju Smith-Schuster. I know it's easier said than done, but if you can do those things, then you're putting yourself in an absolute great position.
Yes.
So, again, Patriots are 2-6. They're the worst team officially in the AFC now. But the Chargers went on Sunday Night Football. They jumped the full game ahead of the Patriots in the AFC standings. And people are like, oh, they're two games out of a wild card spot. Yeah, but guess what? You can't expect them to move up if you don't expect them to win games. And I just don't expect them to win games. I don't. But again, I don't know what the future's going to hold, but it's looking, you know, pretty gray right now for the Patriots and for this organization and for this fan base because we don't know what to expect at this point. And that's the problem. But anyways, this Dolphins game, again, I mean, you know, Mac Jones throws a pick. You know, Miami runs RPOs all the time. You have Tyreek Hill, one of the fastest people in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hard to cover. So you take away the deep ball, but you give up the intermediate yardage. And then when you try to stop the intermediate yardage, Tyreek Hill takes off in a foot race, and he beats you by about 5 yards down the sideline. So again, how do you guard that? It's tough to guard. It's tough to play defense against, but you're not going to see them for the rest of the year. The two Miami games, you can pretty much chuck up as losses now, which is so sad to think about. It really
is.
It's sad. But anything else on just the Dolphins game or just the, kind of the outlook going into 2024 before we get into the Commanders game?
No.
All right, so let's get into this real quick. Patriots, Commanders, Week 9 in Foxborough. Look, the Commanders. The Commanders are in an interesting position because they just made two big trades. So we're recording on Tuesday, October 31st. Happy Halloween, by the way. Yeah. And I have a question for Powder at the end that I know he'll like, a little Halloween-themed question. But the NFL trade deadline's come and gone. The Commanders made two big moves on their defense. They traded Chase Young to the San Francisco 49ers and Montez Sweat, two linemen. Sweat went to the Chicago Bears. So the Commanders are hitting the reset button too.
Yeah.
But they're such a weird team because they have some okay players. Like they have Antonio Gibson, that's okay, but even he's not having a good year. Terry McLaurin's a good wide receiver. Sam Howell has been making improvements. So I don't know what this team's going to look like. I think this is going to be an ugly game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. And you know what? I'll just do my score prediction right now, and then, Powder, you can throw in any other details you want, make your score prediction. But I'm going to say Washington wins this game like 17-13. I think it's going to be an ugly, ugly, ugly game. I think the Patriots, like they have in the past, will have a chance to win it. And except for the Buffalo game, it's going to end up like it did many times. And end up with the Patriots finding a way to screw it up. So give me 17-13 Commanders this weekend in Foxborough. Because don't, and also, Commanders, a couple of their wins, I think they're 3-4 this year. two of their three wins, 3-5. Okay, so 3-5. Two of their three wins this year have been on the road. So they can play on the road. They have no problem doing it. The Patriots haven't been the best home team in the NFL the past couple of years. They've found ways to lose at home. But anyways, Powder, go ahead. Anything you want to take a look at with this Commanders game, and then just give us a score prediction before we kind of move on.
Yeah, just kind of similar to what you said. The Commanders just trade away some of their players and them hitting the reset button, but still they're probably playing better than they are playing better than the Patriots are this year. And I just think at this point, kind of hoping for losses so the Patriots do get that good draft pick. So I'm going to say Commanders win 21-17.
Okay. So you're rooting for the tank. You're rooting for the draft pick. I mean, listen, if they win, great. Like, I'll be happy. But if they lose, it's like, okay, you know, check the tankathon standings. Because if you take a look at those standings, right, I'm looking at it right now. The Arizona Cardinals have the number one pick at 1-7. The Bears have the number two pick because they have Carolina's pick based off the DJ Moore trade. So they're 1-6. Carolina's 1-6. So that's going to go Chicago. Chicago has the number three pick at 2-6. The Giants are 2-6 with the number four pick. And then the Patriots are number five with a 2-6 record. So if this, I'm playing that card, if the season ended, the Patriots would have the number five overall pick in the draft. And that could be, if you wanted to trade up and you liked, you know, a Harrison or a May or a Williams or whatever it is, then you can go up and get them if you want, because someone will take a number five overall pick, especially if that team wants something that they know you're not going to take. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm hoping that they kind of win a couple more games this year. I mean, they're playing the Giants, and the Giants are a dumpster fire on offense too. So that's going to be a battle of the turd bowl right there. So It's going to be pretty bad when that game comes along. But again, one game at a time, see if you can make it competitive against the Commanders.
Yep.
All right, Powder. I picked the first topic. You picked the next one. What do you want to go next?
Let's go to 3-0 Celtics.
3-0 Celtics. Okay, so the Boston Celtics have opened up the season just about as everyone expected. 3-0 on the year. They opened up last Wednesday night against the New York Knicks and came away with a 108-104 victory. They were actually down 7 with about 4 minutes left in this game. They came back and won the game after being off to a hot start. Kristaps Porzingis making his Celtics debut, a memorable one, 30 points, The unicorn in that one. Just an unbelievable game from Kristaps Porzingis. And then the Celtics came home for their first home game of the season on Friday night against the Miami Heat. Came away with a 119-111 victory over those pesky players on the Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler and Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro, and Bam Adebayo and them. Ugh. It's a good rivalry, though. Yeah. It's a fun rivalry. And then the Celtics traveled to Washington, and they beat the Wizards pretty badly. The final score doesn't indicate it. 126-107 victory for the Celtics on the road. But they did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
They beat the crap out of the Wizards for the first three quarters. But the couple things, just two quick things I want to talk about. One positive, one negative. I'll start with the negative. The bench, Powder, so far, it's only three games, but I'm not liking what I've seen from this bench so far. There was a moment in the fourth quarter, especially of the Wizards game, where I was watching Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard kind of be the head guys of the second line. And then, like, Luke Kornet was in there. I think O'Shea Brissett was in there. And I forget who else was in there. There was somebody else. I forget who it was. But bottom line is, after your starting five of Holiday, Brown, Tatum, Porzingis, and Derek White, you have Al Horford coming off the bench, which is great. But after Al Horford, you really have gotten low numbers. Peyton Pritchard signed that new contract, that four-year, $30 million extension. He hasn't played well. Sam Hauser doesn't look like he's comfortable shooting the basketball right now, so that's not good. They really don't have that backup big after Horford. Not to say they need a third-string center, but they need like that second-string like power forward center type that can come in, give either Kristaps Porzingis or Tatum some minutes off. And honestly, in the fourth quarter of that Wizards game, the Wizards outscored the Celtics bench 32-18. Now, if they outscored him by like 5 or 6 points, it's like, okay, that's not that big of a deal. You expect that. But to meet double digits and convincing, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because on nights where you have games like that, where you're expected to win and cream the opponent, guys like Tatum and Brown and Holiday, like the starting five and Al Horford, need their rest because it's going to be a long season. Mm-hmm. So the bench better figure it out pretty quick, because if not, it's going to be ugly when we go second unit against second units of some of these other teams. They definitely need to step up there.
And the Wizards are pressured going 3-for-18 in that Wizards game, looking at the stats.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah.
So you're shooting 16% from the field combined. That's really, really disgusting.
In the 3 game from Hauser, Pritchard was 0-for-8.
Which game was that?
That was a Wizards game.
Oh, so Hauser was 0-for-8, you say?
No, Pritchard was 0-for-8.
Oh, Pritchard was 0-for-8. Okay, and Hauser was 3. Okay, so Hauser was okay. Pritchard was awful that game.
Yeah.
But again, even so, like, this team has such a strong starting five and sixth man, but they need those couple bench pieces to just step up. They don't have to do it every night, but just, you know, Sam Hauser has a good shooting game, or Pritchard has a good game, or O'Shea Brissett brings a little spark like he did against the Heat. That's fine, but you need to make sure you have that bench just solidified in place. So that's where I'm at with the Celtics as far as the negative. The positive, though, is Kristaps Porzingis on the defensive end and Jrue Holiday on the defensive end. Oh my gosh, Powder. It's like watching the old Celtics teams that their identity was defense. Like, they emphasize steals, they emphasize blocks, they emphasize good defensive possessions.
Yeah.
Shutting down possessions right away. It's so refreshing to see. Marcus Smart, don't get me wrong, Marcus Smart, Rob Williams, really, really good defensively too. But just to see it in action from a couple other guys, and then the whole team kind of gets around it, that's a message I can get behind. And you take a look at this stretch coming up for the Celtics. Their stretch isn't that terrible. Like, they have the Pacers on Wednesday night. They have the Nets on Saturday night. The Timberwolves next Monday night. Then they have the 76ers on the road. And by the way, these are all road games except for the Pacers one. And then home against the Nets on Friday, November 10th, which is actually Veterans Day being observed, so thank you to our troops. And then the Celtics play next Saturday night against the Toronto Raptors. So I'm not even kidding you, Powder. This team could potentially, they could start, let's see, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They could start 9-0 or 10-0 to start the year. It's not off the table. The tough game is going to be that 76ers game, but they just traded James Harden to the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
For a bunch of role players to help Joel Embiid, which I don't know how much that's going to help. But I do want to hear your thoughts on the Celtics, just anything that stood out to you via the stats or anything like that, anything you want to see going forward.
Yeah, like you said, definitely good to see the Celtics off to a 3-0 start, but that's kind of what you expected with them coming into the year. But, like, I haven't been able to watch much of the Celtics. I watched the end of the Heat game, which was fun to watch them come back and win that game. But like you said, when I'm looking at the stats and seeing the bench not helping at all, seeing most of the scoring come from the starters, like you said, that's a recipe for disaster come March, April, into the playoffs, because you don't want Brown and Tatum and Porzingis and even Horford off the bench playing extended minutes in games, like you said, against a Wizards that they should win and get in teams like that. You want the Celtics to hopefully get out to a big lead after 3 quarters, and the rest of the game they can cruise with their bench and give their whole starters a quarter off that gives them extra rest and everything like that. So agree with you with the bench needing to step it up so the Celtics can have their main guys be rested. Maybe not rested, but healthy going into the later stretches of the season. And then, yeah, it was good to see Porzingis make a big impact in game one of the season and have him play good defense and Jrue Holiday play defense like he does. So hopefully the Celtics can keep it rolling, like you said. And one question I have for you is, do you see the court, the in-season play, in-season tournament court?
I did. It was so nice.
I know. I really liked it when I saw it.
Oh, I did too. Which then the play-in tournament or the mid-season tournament, I'm just like, all right. Like, I hope they don't win that and that's their championship. Like, that would suck.
I feel like the Celtics, I feel like that's like a a mediocre team that's going to be like an 8 seed, that's their goal because they know they don't have a chance to win the actual NBA Finals. Like for a team like the Celtics, they win it, that'll be cool. It'll be like the Robert Kraft meme of when he's trying to hand the AFC trophy off to someone because they won it so many times. Like I think the Celtics, they care about winning, and so they, if they win it, they'll be happy, but that's not their goal in any way.
It's not. Great comparison, by the way, the Robert Kraft AFC Championship. That was a good one. I like that one. Good job. But yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate goal is the end of the season, the Larry O'Brien Trophy. That's the goal. Yeah. And the whole Celtics organization has made that clear from Wick Grosbeck, Steve Pagliuca, to Joe Mazzulla, everyone else. Everyone knows what the goal is. And it's attainable. Because I think you can beat the Nuggets. I think you can beat anybody in the West. You just got to get through Milwaukee and get through the East, which I think you can do too. This is their year to do it, and they need to do it. I've said it so many times. But again, bench, help the starters out a little bit, please.
Yeah. Please.
All right, any other Celtics thoughts before we move on, Powder?
No, I don't got anything.
Okay. Just a real fast Bruins minute, then we'll do a quick ad read, and then we'll end with the Red Sox. The Bruins are 8-0-1, 8 wins, 0 regulation losses, 1 regulation-shootout loss on the season. The one thing with the Bruins I will say is it's a little different than last year. Last year, I think it was you could rely heavily on the top couple of lines to really make an impact. Like, yeah, they were getting contributions, like good contributions from like the third line and the fourth line too.
Yeah.
But they really need to emphasize this year that they need contributions from literally everyone to keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do it with something like what Charlie McAvoy did. So Charlie McAvoy has been suspended 4 games because he had a check on the head of Florida Panthers, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, that was deemed a dirty hit. I saw the hit. It wasn't, definitely wasn't a clean hit. So now he's out for the next 4 games. So you're down a defenseman. Matt Grizzlick got hurt too. So now you're down 2 of your top defensemen. So that's not really good right now. So this Bruins team is going to be tested. They got the Maple Leafs coming to town on Thursday. I wish Maddie was on this episode so we could talk about it. But I think the Maple Leafs will give the Bruins their first regulation loss of the season. But at the same time, give them credit for the Panthers win. They were down 2-0 after the first period. Brad Marchand gets a goal to cut the lead to 1. Charlie McAvoy gets a goal in the third period to tie it up. And then Pavel Zacha wins it in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a character win. That's even what Jim Montgomery said. It's a character win. You're still getting good goaltending for the most part from Ullmark and Swayman. You're having different guys contribute. Pasternak's having a great season so far. But now it's about, okay, will this keep up? I don't think it will. But you got to get contributions from everyone. Excuse me. That's just my one little Bruins tidbit. Do you have anything with that, Powder, or do you want to just?
No, I got nothing.
Okay. So now we're going to talk about the Red Sox, but before we do that, Powder.
Yep.
Got to mention our friends.
Oh, yeah. Friends at A&B Kitchen Bar and A&B Burgers. A&B Kitchen Bar is located in Boston, Massachusetts, right across the street from the TD Garden. And A&B Burgers is located in Beverly, Massachusetts, right in the North Shore. If you're looking for a great spot to meet up before, after, a Bruins game, a Celtics game, a concert at the Garden, whatever brings you into Boston to the Garden, A&B Kitchen and Bar is a place to go. It has the best burgers, has all local food from farms around the state of Mass in New England, local draft beers, everything, and the atmosphere is great. Like I said, right before Bruins or Celtics game, you want to be in the atmosphere, get there early, have a nice bite to eat, and then head in. Or even if you don't have tickets, you want to be in the atmosphere, head over to A&B Kitchen and Bar. And make sure you tell them the Legends Lingo Boys sent you.
I know we joke about this, Powder, but I'm being dead serious when I say this. We should talk to A&B Kitchen and Bar. Ask them in like late March, early May. Or late March, early April.
Yeah.
See if we can do like on a Thursday night, like a live show.
Yeah.
And get people there. Have people like come up and give their hot takes and everything else. I think it would be great.
It would be.
I don't know. Just an idea to throw out there. I mean, you do know the owners.
I do.
You do. All right, let's talk a little Red Sox. So the Red Sox finally have a president of baseball operations. It is former major league reliever and Red Sox reliever, for that matter. Two-time World Series champion Craig Breslow. He was recently the vice president for the Chicago Cubs, or assistant GM, whatever you want to call it. He was the right-hand man of Theo Epstein. Initial take on this. When you saw the big names like Brandon Gomes, Chris Antonetti, and some of these other names, Kim Heng, you know, not want to take the job, Breslow kind of seemed like the next logical fit.
Yeah.
My one concern with this, Powder, is you're getting someone that's similar to Heim Bloom in the sense of you don't know what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what his plan is. You don't know how he's going to attack the offseason. Now, from what people have said in a bunch of rumors and sources and reports, Breslow has a good keen eye for pitching and pitching talent and developing pitching and everything else, which is great. The Red Sox need that bad. But will Breslow be that guy that is going to go out and potentially sign Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Will he be the one to sign potentially a Shohei Ohtani or an Aaron Nola or another big name? Because let's face it, the Red Sox need a couple big names, especially in the starting rotation, to help them get back to true contention in 2024. And they're under the luxury tax, so they have the money to spend. How will they spend it? What will Breslow do? That's my concern. We don't know what his plan is. So how can we trust that, oh my gosh, this is a great hire? It's like, okay, it's a good hire, but we don't know how good it is until we see him being put to action. And by the way, the winter meetings, correct me if I'm wrong, I think are in like a month or so, right?
Give me one sec, and I will look it up.
I think they're in about a month, so hopefully winter meetings, you get some deals done, and you bring in some high-quality talent. You know, the guys I mentioned, Blake Snell.
December 4th through 7th, so yep, just about a month.
Just a little over a month. So you have a little over a month to make a game plan and be like, okay, here's the guys we're going to sign. Here's the guys that we're going to trade. Here's what we're going to do to improve our roster. Because you have a good roster as far as young kids is concerned, but getting a couple good veterans in there would definitely be a big help. So again, good for Craig Breslow. Hopefully he can lead. I mean, he knows about Boston. He knows about winning in Boston. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I don't know. So I want to hear your thoughts, Powder, your thoughts on the hiring of Craig Breslow. What do you want to see from him? What do you think you're going to see from him, et cetera? So the floor is yours.
Yeah. It was good to see the tweet from Legends Lingo friend Rob Bradford saying that the Red Sox consulted Poppy, Pedroia, Veritek, Euculus, all the names that you want to hear the Red Sox talk to about Craig Breslow and all that, if he's a good fit. And all the reports are that he's going to be a very good fit for the Red Sox. Hopefully, like you said, he has the trigger finger to pull off big moves, and he is able to do that. Because, like, obviously you want a mix between Diego Dombrowski, who made all the big moves, who did all that. But also, I do like the Heim Bloom, where he does care about the farm system, because you want the product of the Red Sox to last a long time. Where, yes, if you have to trade off a couple pieces here and there, that's perfectly fine to get that big player, to get a Juan Soto or someone like that, if you need to make those trades. But you also don't want to be Dave Dombrowski, who completely depletes your farm system, where you're 28th in all of baseball. You don't have a top 100 prospect. I think you need a mix of that. I think him working under Theo for a couple of years with the Cubs, and then even Theo came out and said he's a very good hire. He's a brilliant baseball mind. And I like that he's a former player, because he understands. I think he'll understand how to talk to players more than someone who's just a smart guy that works his way up to that position. So I think it's a good hire, but obviously we have to wait and see. I thought the Heim Bloom hire was a very good hire, and obviously didn't work out too great for the Red Sox. But also, you need ownership to open up their purses and say, okay, we're fine to spend money. You want it to go back to those Red Sox. So hopefully everything can work out where he is able to get ownership to agree to sign some big time players.
That's what you need. You need someone that's going to go out there, make the big splashes, get the big fishes, and not be afraid to pull the trigger on those moves. You need that at this point. Because we've seen too much now of the process, the minor league system, you know, the young guys, everything. Okay, now the young guys are starting to come into form. Now they're starting to get their experience. Now go get some help. So that way you can compete in a division that you have the Orioles that had the year that they just had. The Rays are always going to be the Rays, at least for now. The Blue Jays are a juggernaut offensively, but they've taken some steps back. But they're still, you know, just as good, if not better than you. And you know the Yankees are going to spend this offseason. They're going to be in on all the big names. They've already been in on Cody Bellinger, as far as reports are concerned. There apparently were discussions about a Juan Soto trade. So they're going to make moves, and you know that. So now, where are you going to be? Are you going to be on the side of the fence with everyone else where you're trying to make moves? Or are you going to be on the other side where you're like, nah, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, but we're going to throw little twists and turns in there? You need to be on that side of the fence with everybody else. Period. So happy for Craig Breslow. Welcome not back to Boston, because he was in Boston. He's a Newton guy who lives in Newton, Mass. Now. So welcome to making this your permanent residence, so you don't have to travel that far for work. But we talk about players, Powder. Let's talk about this real quick. So there were some free agent predictions and best fit columns that Jim Bowden, who's an MLB analyst and insider for CBS Sports, wrote about. And in that, he connected players to the Red Sox. And here were some of the deals that he came out with for these big names. I'll start with actually the smallest name, Justin Turner, who I think we'd all love to have back on a reasonable deal.
Yeah.
1 year, $12 billion. Lucas Giolito, 2 years, $24 million with an opt-out after the first year. Blake Snell, 5 years, $122 million. Aaron Nola, 5 years, $125 million. Yamamoto, 7 years, $211 million. Otani, 10 years, $477 million. Now, when I hear those numbers, Powder, first thing I hear is, that's doable.
Yeah.
Tell me one contract in there that is not doable for this Red Sox team that's now under the luxury tax.
I don't think they're, like, obviously Shohei is going to cost you a lot of money, but I still think that's doable for what he gives you. So I don't see one that isn't.
I don't either. I would take that Snell deal and the Yamamoto deal.
Yeah.
30.14 million and then, you know, 20.5 or close to, about 24.5 million a year. Like, if it's going to get you solid pitching, it's going to get you your number one, number two pitchers in the rotation, then do it. Then if you have Brian Bayo, then if you have Chris Sale, then if you have Carter Crawford, now you have a legit rotation.
Yes.
Then it becomes, you know, like something to fear. And the bullpen did its job last year. Chris Martin, you know, MVP type of year as far as the bullpen's concerned. And Jansen. He's still going to be a really good closer for you if you keep him for another year. So out of those contracts, I mean, I like the Yamamoto and Snell potentials, but you got to do it. That's the whole thing. You have to do it. So I don't know if any of those stood out to you. I don't know if there's any you really like, but.
I mean, I like the Giolito deal. It's short money for 2 years. He has maybe not like Cy Young winning potential, but Cy Young vote getting potential, where he's a very good, probably number two if you can get a good number one. But I like him. Like you said, the Snell, I like that deal too, because I think Snell, obviously he's going NL Cy Young, like he has it locked up. But even him, he's pitching the AL East, like we've said before. He knows how to win here. Getting him in here, he'll be a clear number one for the Red Sox. So those two deals I like.
Whoever they get will be the number one. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. But all right. Is there anything else you want to talk about with the Red Sox?
No, that's all I got.
All right. Just a quick World Series update. Congrats to the Arizona Diamondbacks and Texas Rangers for getting to the World Series. As we're recording, Game 4 is going to be played on Tuesday night. Rangers are up 2-1. Potter, you think the Rangers close it out, or do you think the Diamondbacks find a way to pull it off?
I think it's going to be a 7-game series, but I think the Rangers are going to pull it off.
Okay. All right, I still think Rangers in 5 or 6, but that's just me, but we'll see. Anything else you wanted to... Potter, real quick. Because it's Halloween, I just want to ask you, the best Halloween candy to get, what is it?
Oh, best Halloween candy to get? You know what? I've gotten probably a little bit too addicted to this past Halloween season is the pumpkin Reese's. Rachel got me into them, and for some reason, they just taste better than a normal Reese's cup. I just think the chocolate to peanut butter ratio, however they're made, is just better. So
that's a good take, because I'm a big Reese's guy. I think you knew this about me. I'm huge into the Reese's peanut butter cup game. But yes, got to go with the Reese's. What's a candy that you absolutely should not have on Halloween?
I hate candy corn.
Candy corn, yes. You know what else? And my coworkers and I were talking about this. Banana-flavored Laffy Taffys.
Oh, yep.
There's a few of them that like it, and then the rest of us are just like, what are you doing? They're all great people. Like, I love working with them. They're great people. But it's like, what are you doing? Like, why? Yep. I don't know, the banana flavor, it's just like, ugh.
Yeah,
huge Reese's person. Like, you gotta go Reese's, you gotta go Snickers, you gotta go Milky Way, throw the Twix in there, maybe like Three Musketeers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's any candies that I really missed?
I don't think so.
What about gummy candy? Gummy candy on Halloween, what do you think?
I don't mind it, but I'd rather a chocolate bar or something like that.
Yeah, I mean... one of my coworkers, he made a really good point. It's like, if you're in the chocolate mindset and you get gummies, it kind of throws everything off, the taste buds off. I'm like, yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Especially for Halloween, especially when you're younger, too.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up.
Only thing, did you see Joe Thornton retired today?
Was that official today? I saw you retired the other day.
I definitely saw something today. It could have been the other day, but that happened the other day, but. Yeah, saw that he retired.
Yeah, Jumbo Joe, known for his days with the Bruins and especially with the San Jose Sharks. He played for like the Maple Leafs and then like the Capitals or something. Then he played for two different teams after the Bruins and the Sharks. But shout out to Jumbo Joe, Big Bird. They kind of called him all different names. Great NHL career, Hall of Fame caliber career. So congratulations, Joe Thornton, on your retirement. All right. As always, make sure to rate and subscribe to the Legends Lingo podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, everywhere else where you can get your podcasts. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Lingo Legends, and make sure to follow Student Union Sports on all accounts, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything else at Student Union Sports. If you want to get involved in the sports industry, whether it is being a videographer, whether it's being a podcaster, a writer, anything that you want to know about, make sure to contact Liam Smith at Student Union Sports. He's the guy that will get you started, and he's the guy that will direct you and the leader behind our pirate ship. But if nothing else, for episode 245, that's Tom Powder Cadmus. I'm your host, Alan Egan. Hopefully, Maddie B will be back next week. We'd love to miss you, Maddie. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week for episode 246.
Happy Halloween. Yes, sir.
Happy Halloween.